Bonsoir and bienvenue. Please take your seats. Bienvenue à la sixième édition de Bravo, Bravo 2010 or Bravo 2010. Je suis fière de vous souhaiter la bienvenue et de convier les gagnants des prix et des récompenses de l'édition 2010 de Bravo à cette soirée de célébration sans pareil. L'Université McGill est fière de son héritage composé de gagnants, de prix et de récompenses, de bourses de premier plan et d'activités de découverte qui, au fil des années, ont contribué à façonner de manière significative le tissu de la société canadienne et celui du monde. Ce soir, j'ai le grand honneur de vous accueillir dans le cadre de cet événement spécial organisé à votre honneur. Vous pouvez et devez être très fiers de vos réalisations ainsi que de vos contributions à votre communauté et à la société. Vos collègues et vos proches, ainsi que l'Université McGill, ont le privilège d'être à vos côtés pour manifester leur fierté. So all to say that I want to add my personal pride and congratulations and that of McGill's University to all our 29 prize winners that we're going to meet in various media and in person and congratulate and honor tonight. I'm told that Bravo had quite humble beginnings. The first Bravo was in May 2006, apparently a small, intimate affair in the nearby new Schulich building. And as the years progressed, the event expanded to include, as tonight, invited guests and partners, and also at some time had some research exhibitions. This year, we focused, in particular, as I mentioned, on the 29 researchers who have garnered some of the most prestigious Canadian awards during 2010. These McGill researchers join the many celebrated McGill researchers who have brought home world-class top prizes over the years, including the Gairdner Health Awards, Nobel Prize, Hertzberg Medals, Guggenheim Fellowships, Killam Prizes, some of which we have tonight, and the Japan Prize, to name a few. We also this year had 13 fellows named to the Royal Society of Canada, most of whom are here tonight. And as you know, this is Canada's most important and prestigious scholarly society. This number, 13, was the most this year for any Canadian university. It's, I believe, a record for McGill and really a testimony to the great scholarship that we have at McGill. 9 faculty were invited into the Order of Canada. Truly an amazing number, and again, a testimony to the contribution that McGillians make to Canadian and world society. I couldn't actually verify if this is a record in Canada for a university in a year or a record for McGill, but I think it is. It's fair to say that it's an outstanding accomplishment. I want to take a moment to also welcome some special guests. We have partners and some funding organizations represented tonight. We also have members of the Board of Governors and also members of the senior executive team, some of whom I'll introduce to you a little bit later. We also have some of our deans I wanted to recognize, and perhaps you could stand if I mention your name so that people know who you are. Dean of Arts, Christopher Manfredi. Just stand up for a moment so people can recognize you. He was here. There you go, caught him. Dean of Education, Hélène Perrault. Dean of the School of Engineering, Faculty of Engineering, Christophe Pierre. And Dean of the Faculty of Science, Martin Grant, who I think is still here. Thank you. Thank you all, and all of you for being here tonight. It's a time to celebrate, as I mentioned, the 29 researchers who have won these very prestigious Canadian awards. It's also a time to celebrate the important people behind the many outstanding research accomplishments that we celebrate tonight and that you have brought to McGill. I want to recognize, and I know our prize winners will also want to recognize, the contributions of so many that stand behind them and their research accomplishments. Our colleagues, students, staff, the whole McGill community, our collaborators, our funding agencies, our governments, our partners in the private sector, and all of those who make your groundbreaking research and scholarship possible. So I thank you all on behalf of McGill and the prize winners, and I thank all of you for joining us tonight. Lastly, I wanted to thank the University Prizes and Awards Committee members. There are also committees in several faculties that work very hard and play an important role in promoting these major national and international prizes and awards, particularly the faculty deans, department chairs, all the people who nominate individuals for these prestigious awards who are often forgotten. Also, all of those, and I know many of you are probably in the room, who've written and submitted letters of support, which many of these portfolios need. There's a tremendous amount of work, again, that's done in the background of these prizes, and I want to recognize those tonight and thank you. I'm not able to name all the nominators, there are really too many, but I wanted to recognize them, and especially I know many of you are in the audience, and so I thank you personally. I want to make a small plea to continue to nominate your colleagues. Also, for some of the prize winners at the reception, talk to me about this, and also that they want to, now that they've celebrated their awards, and some of them have celebrated them, including with me, several times, how wonderful it is to be able to celebrate your accomplishments in this way, both locally and at national events, and that it's wonderful to now turn around and pay it forward and nominate your colleagues. I'm sure that they will continue to nominate you, and you nominate them, and I think you all really deserve the honor. It's a wonderful way, as I think you see, to support and recognize our colleagues and our own university. And so I'll close with saying that without all this collaboration in the background, we wouldn't be here tonight honoring 29 2010 prize and awards winners. So I thank you all. So I'm going, in order to have me speak a shorter amount and not have to listen to me introduce you in detail to all of the winners, we have a video prepared that we're going to now watch. So I'm going to ask you to sit back and relax and watch the video, and I'll be back on the stage to introduce the winners in person in a few minutes. Thank you.
So my work deals with building intelligent systems, and in particular robotic systems. So systems where computational intelligence is embodied in some mechanical system and can go out into the world. So specifically, we work on, for example, a robot that can swim and walk, and it moves around in the water, can swim underwater with a person, without a person, take video, understand that video to some extent, hopefully come back to the same place as it's seen before and take new measurements, and in some sense build models and kind of understand the world that it's in. And so we've worked with biologists at McGill whose research, their biological research, is to understand what's going on a coral reef and how fish species move around on them.
The focus of my research in high-energy particle theory is on how matter behaves under extreme conditions of temperature and density. So if you take ordinary matter and you pack it together so hot and so dense that the nuclei all fuse together into one continuous medium of hot stuff. Hotter than occurs in stars, more like the conditions which occurred in the first microsecond of the history of the universe, which is one of the interesting applications, and the conditions that we can achieve in laboratory by colliding two nuclei with each other. And we think that we know the theory which is supposed to describe these conditions, but that doesn't mean that we know how to successfully use the theory or calculate the behavior of this material under those conditions.
The project that the Killam has allowed me to pursue is to be the coordinator for galactic science on a new NASA mission. It's a space telescope that is being built at Caltech and the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena. It's a $165 million project. It's launching a new type of X-ray telescope. The launch date is spring 2012, and I'm helping to decide what targets within our own galaxy this telescope is going to study.
Well, the McGill Metals Processing Center is involved with the metals industry, in particular the steel making and aluminum industries. And we work on processes, the improvement of them, or the invention of new processes that have green aspects to them, environmentally sustainable in the future. We have better processes that we can bring in, for instance, in strip casting, compared with the conventional casting that's happening at the present time.
Our mission for the UNPC is to work with industry and to do fundamental and applied research that mainly is to educate, to train our students in such a way that they can be good specialists and future workers in industry.
There's a very specific moment that I knew that I wanted to study, in my case, international management, and especially the people parts of international management, cross-cultural management. How do you have human beings from around the world and organizations from around the world working together for the greater benefit of all of us? I decided to study the women who had gotten chosen and look at what led to success. So I think one of the other themes with global leadership is I've constantly been asking the question, what works, instead of what isn't working.
Well, I think our research will continue at a basic science level, because ultimately the only answer to any medical problem is more and better basic science research that will lead to novel methods of treatment, and we have to make that our number one priority. But having said that, some of the work that our lab has carried out has led to perhaps better understanding of methods of HIV transmission, and as a result of that research, we are now also trying to mount prevention efforts that are research-oriented right here in Montreal and as well in developing country settings. I think our next best effort should be on trying to prevent numbers of transmissions, and so certainly that has to be a focus both for us and for many other groups throughout the world.
I've been looking to address those systems in the brain, the neurons in the brain, and the chemicals they use, which keep the brain and thus the organism, the individual, awake and vigilant to adapt and respond effectively during a waking, normal waking state, which for humans is the entire light period of the day. And then conversely, how other neural systems and chemicals turn off the waking system to enforce sleep and rest, which for humans occurs during darkness at night. So going deeper and deeper into that, being able to use over my lifetime increasingly more powerful tools, it's just continually exciting.
My research has always been in the area of genetics, trying to understand genetic disease. We were able to start a diagnostic service here at the Children's where we could actually inform families about their risk for having children with specific disorders. Later on, when we became involved in risk factors, we actually identified some very common genetic variants which actually interact with your diet in terms of causing disease. So that allowed us to identify mechanisms to prevent certain kinds of disorders by modulating the intake of certain vitamins, for example. So we've identified a very common variant that's actually now being tested for worldwide in many, many different labs because it's considered to be an important predictor of birth defects, heart disease, some pregnancy complications. So there's actual practical uses of some of our discoveries.
Je travaille principalement sur le rôle de la biodiversité dans le fonctionnement des écosystèmes. C'est-à-dire, j'essaie de comprendre comment, en perdant des espèces ou d'autres formes de diversité du vivant, on risque de bouleverser les équilibres naturels dans les écosystèmes à petite échelle ou même à l'échelle de la biosphère dans son ensemble. Nos travaux montrent que quand on perd des espèces, on a tendance à perdre la stabilité du fonctionnement des écosystèmes. Donc à long terme, ça veut dire des systèmes qui sont moins productifs, qui sont plus variables. C'est fondamental à mon avis. On est dans une période de crise majeure de notre rapport à l'environnement.
So my research focuses on the genetics of aging. One of the theories of aging has been around for a long time, and the theory that has pretty much been accepted by the public, not just by scientists, was that free radicals, which are toxic compounds that are produced by our bodies, actually cause aging. And the free radicals are these compounds that are believed are being fought, are being combated by antioxidants. Antioxidants, you know, prevent free radicals from having their toxicity. And what we've shown that this theory is probably wrong, that free radicals do not cause aging, and therefore that maybe the use and abuse of antioxidants should be analyzed or at least called into question.
I use a technique called X-ray scattering, X-ray diffraction, and so that's how we measure the atomic structure of the materials. So over the last 20 years, 30 years, the quality or the capability of doing X-ray scattering has increased enormously, like more than a billion times, basically because of new machines that have been designed called synchrotrons. And so that's allowed us to measure the structure of materials much faster than we could before and with much finer detail. And so it's, as a physicist, it's always nice to be able to be the first to look at things. And so the kinds of things we've been looking at are things that are not directly like tempering of steel, but related to tempering of steel. So we've done things where we would cool a material from being very hot to very cold, and it starts to undergo what's called a phase transition where the structure changes, and then we watch with the X-rays. We sort of make an X-ray movie to see how the structure changes with time.
So my research is really about understanding the link between information technology and how information technology transforms organizations. How we develop information technology, how we implement information technology, how people adapt to information technology, resist to information technology, and how we measure the benefit and the value that information technology brings. The organizations that really use it effectively are organizations that have a plan. They know what they're expecting, and they know what benefit they want to achieve, and they reorganize the way people work. They reorganize the way they're structured to really benefit from information technology. So communication, 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 and making sure expectations are very, very clear is critical.
Well, we are investigating, you know, kind of thing like advanced transmission technique and the adaptive resource allocation technique. The idea is to get more bandwidth capacity for wireless communication. Before, we're talking about human-to-human communication. Now we talk more machine-to-machine, and we want to be communication available everywhere. And that get into things like the modern home with the management in the home, like energy, in term of alarm system, in term of safety. So I think that is what is demanding in the next 10, 20 years.
What my research started as is really looking at trying to understand primate social organization. So looking at questions about why some monkeys are found all by themselves or in small groups, whereas other monkeys you can find groups of 200, 300. So it's really amazing the variation. And what's the ecological factors kind of behind that? And then what are the kind of social ramifications of that? And now we've shifted towards looking at the diseases and what diseases do the monkeys carry? What are their consequences in terms of their fitness, their reproduction, and how disease might jump from primates to humans?
I love doing the research itself. I basically, you know, more or less launched this field that looks at second language acquisition from a Chomsky perspective, and that is, and people sort of said, oh yes, this is what we should be doing. That's very gratifying. But what I really find most gratifying is training graduate students who see the value of the field and want to develop their own hypotheses and ideas within the same general context. And I've had, over the years, more than 20 graduate students, and many of them have gone on to academic university careers, several of them now full professors themselves. And that is really wonderful.
The main thrust, the main line is really media arts, and I, as I am a specialist of contemporary art, so it's really contemporary media arts from the 1960s to the present. How artistic practices integrate emerging technologies. Technologies can never determine the way that we perceive the world, but they influence the way that we see the world. In what way has cinema even shaped our way of of understanding and looking at the world? Don't we, I mean, how is it to look at the world not only through the grid of cinema, but even in daily life? Do we not see the world in a more cinematographic way, in a more filmic way?
My area of research is early Chinese history, particularly newly discovered archaeological documents, texts, as well as the history of science and technology in China, particularly military technology. Prior to the 19th century, there were more books published in China than anywhere else in the world put together. Very fortunately, 1972, then archaeology started again after the end of the Cultural Revolution, and enormous numbers of finds were being made. And since that time, there have been immense numbers of documents and early texts discovered. And so now we are able to completely rewrite the whole history of early China.
Moi, j'enseigne la littérature française de la Renaissance et je m'intéresse plus particulièrement aux écrits des femmes du XVIe siècle français et aux écrits de ceux que l'on a appelés les pré-réformateurs. Je pense à un cas en particulier, Marie de Gournay, qui était la fille d'Alliance de Montaigne. Elle a pris position sur d'innombrables sujets, sur la traduction, sur l'égalité des hommes et des femmes, qui à l'époque était encore impensable. Donc, moi, ce qui m'intéresse vraiment, c'est comment cette marginalité prend la parole sur la place publique. Et pourquoi, et selon quelle organisation sociale, selon quel facteur, dans quel but, par quel financement, par quel moyen?
I'm a theoretical econometrician, and econometrics is by its nature an applied discipline, so working as a theorist means that I develop methodology, I endeavor to show when statistical inference can be reliable and when it is less so. Where I get involved in actual applications is in the analysis of income distribution and of poverty, where I've developed with various colleagues a variety of techniques for having more reliable inference, whereby you can compare income distributions in either different places at the same time or the same place at different times in order to make welfare comparisons in the various circumstances that you're looking at.
The basic focus is to understand how proteins are synthesized in the cell, and what's even more important, how the synthesis is controlled. If you don't control correctly the amount of proteins you make in the cells, you end up with disease and, of course, death. So this led us to different diseases. The major one that we're working on is cancer. The tremendous amount of knowledge that we have now in our hands. So, of course, it took some time, but now the knowledge is accumulated in a logarithmic scale. You know, every day we have more and more. So basically, that's why it's not only me who is optimistic. Everybody is optimistic. That based on that, we can find a way, you know, to cure cancer or to stabilize it.
I was invited to practice, develop a pediatric clinic in community hospital, the Montreal Chinese Hospital. I have searched the difference of health care accessibility and also the knowledge about health maintenance among immigrant groups seem to be suboptimal. And I noticed that iron deficiency anemia is so prevalent, and then the breastfeeding rate was only 8% among Chinese. You see that this target population group's health maintenance behavior, as well as knowledge in nutrition and how to get to medical services, their standard had increased over the years. And that's a very gratifying issue.
Much of my research was, major research was on menopause in the earlier years. and it was a comparative study between Japan and North America. The surprise finding was that it wasn't merely cultural differences that was at work, but that there were very profound and extraordinarily interesting biological differences at work as well. And since that time, most of my research has focused in one way or another on the entanglement and the interrelationship of biology with culture. So I sort of broke through the nature-nurture debate to think about things in a new way. It's not a question of either nature or nurture, but these things are in effect inseparable and need to be understood as interacting with each other.
Well, in Alzheimer's, we have made some emphasis is the role of the very early pathology, in particular the events that take place in relation to the early accumulation of the toxic so-called beta amyloid peptide within cells in an intracellular fashion as opposed to plaque formation. I'm in a group of optimistic and believe that in not a distant future we will find reliable markers that can anticipate the conversion of normal aging to what is called mild cognitive impairment, which is the threshold state to actual clinical Alzheimer's disease with a dementia component.
Well, I've been doing research in the area of deafness and disability for over 40 years. They really need sign language access to access health services, employment services, social services, etc. And it's been very difficult. We've had a shortage of sign language interpreters all over the country. We showed that using video conferencing technology, you could overcome that barrier in that the deaf person and the physician or the health service provider could be in one place and the interpreter could be somewhere else. That could be implemented right now over commercial internet at very little cost. Yet, for some reason or other, we can't seem to get that done. That's a attitudinal barrier. That's something that could happen tomorrow that would drastically change the life of deaf people.
I've been working on hypertension, high blood pressure, in both experimental animals and in humans over the past 35 years. And what we are interested in are the mechanisms underlying the rise in blood pressure, and especially the renin-angiotensin system, aldosterone, endothelin. These are all agents that produce elevation of blood pressure and that control the elimination of sodium from the body, sodium and water, and as a result contribute to blood pressure elevation.
We have defined professionalism so that it is teachable and that one can be explicit as opposed to what was previously fairly fuzzy. Honesty, integrity, competence, caring and compassion, insight into how you're reacting to the patient and the patient is reacting to their own illness, being open to people being different, that they have an autonomy, that it's a partnership, not a dictatorship, if you will, in the relationship. And most importantly, to realize that we don't heal the patient heals themselves. We just facilitate that by the various things that we can do.
The Health Technology Assessment Unit receives requests from the hospital for advice as to whether they should or should not buy new technologies which are not yet on the market. And it considers the advice, it analyzes the benefit and the harm and the cost, and it recommends to the hospital whether it should or should not make that purchase. The best you can do is work with good evidence, clean scientific evidence, unbiased, that the decisions should be taken by informed, unbiased people, and third, that it should be transparent.
Les nouvelles morbidités sont beaucoup d'ordre, en fait, qui touchent le développement de l'enfant et souvent associées à des causes sociales. Et en pédiatrie, on n'était pas vraiment équipé pour faire face à ce type de morbidité qui nuit énormément aux enfants, tant dans la, dans leur cheminement de vie, de leur réussite scolaire, de leur qualité de vie aussi. Et je voulais une approche qui soit très, très près des gens, où on mobilise davantage les communautés et les familles. Maintenant, on est rendu à une dizaine de centres de pédiatrie sociale en communauté au Québec, où les universités participent avec des stages de résidents en pédiatrie et en médecine familiale. Et c'est devenu un concept, une approche qui est une approche très globale, très proximale et très intensive aussi par rapport au suivi d'une trajectoire d'enfant.
If we can understand the nature of matter at ultra-high densities, densities 10, maybe 100 times greater than in an atomic nucleus, maybe in 400 years we'll be driving cars that are powered by a pin-sized pellet of matter for, you know, 20 years, and you don't need gasoline, it's clean energy. I obviously can't guarantee that sort of thing, but who knows? You know, you would never have anticipated the iPhone from Michael Faraday 200 years ago playing with little bits of metal and working out the basics of electromagnetism. I mean, who could guess you'd have a Kindle out of that?
For many years, I've been interested in if nerve cells had the capacity to grow again. With advancements in science, it's been possible to begin to tackle this question. And we've been working for years on this issue, as well as many other labs in different parts of the world. And it turns out that the nerve cells retain the capacity to grow, so they could do it. But something is preventing them from doing it. And if we could unleash that capacity, certainly, there are some hopes that these fibers could again reach their partners and restore function.
Thank you. And isn't that a wonderful video? You really have to say, I think, wow, all the things that that you do, all the research that you're involved in, the depth and the breadth is really, really fantastic. So it's my pleasure now and my honor to introduce and invite McGill's Chancellor, Arnold Steinberg, to come to the podium and say a few words. Chancellor Steinberg.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Bonjour à tous. Je voudrais ajouter mes souhaits de bienvenue à ceux de la vice-principale Goldstein. And this event has a very special significance for me. Over 40 years ago, 1970 to be precise, I was invited to join the board of the McGill University Montreal Children's Hospital Research Institute. 2 years later, I was appointed chair of that board, a position I was proud to hold for the following 19 years. At that first meeting I attended, I was introduced to Dr. Charles Scriber, at the time one of Canada's leading geneticists, if not the leader in that field. And as I have said previously to others, that encounter was the first step to my being appointed Chancellor of McGill 40 years later. For those of you who have had the privilege of knowing Charles, you will no doubt agree that he is an extraordinary human being. But another reason for this event resonating so significantly for me is quite simple. For all these 40 years, while I could merely read and hear about the scientific discoveries, those of you here were doing the real thing. And more than that, doing it at the top of your profession. So thank you, Rosie, for inviting me to participate, and to all of you who are being honored this evening, my most sincere congratulations.
Thank you, Chancellor Steinberg, and it's now my privilege and pleasure to introduce our Principal and Vice Chancellor, Heather Monroe Bloom, to also address the audience. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Principal Goldstein. Et bonsoir, bienvenue et félicitations à nos lauréats, nos honorés ce soir. It's really a wonderful pleasure to come together at this time of the year to recognize our outstanding 29 outstanding colleagues. And the video, I want to congratulate you and the team on it. Really, if we had the time to hear from each of you, we would have gotten some of that glimpse into the wonderful work that you do. But seeing the research and scholarship and the dedication and enthusiasm that each of you brings to your work and has is really moving for me as principal, as I know it is for the chancellor and the vice principal of research. And there is nothing like being with you and hearing from your own voices what inspires you to do the work you do. Nothing that conveys the importance of your scholarship and research. I have the great pleasure of serving as principal and vice chancellor of McGill and have over the past 8 years, and as I go literally from continent to continent representing the university, working with you to support your research collaborations, meeting new students, and meeting with alumni, I hear the pride and respect that a worldwide community of people feel for our university, and it is far from being side by side with you and seeing the dedication that you put into it. So, some of us feel we bask in your reflected glory. It may be a trite way of saying it, but I feel just enormous pride, and never have universities been as important as they are today when we look at how everything from governance to health to the economy to security and peace are global. We can't stand aside from what's happening to people elsewhere in the world, and I see discipline by discipline the work that you are doing, and again the dedication that you bring to do it, to doing it. It is having a broad and important impact, and you so deserve to be recognized. And I know seeing you in your work as we do in the video just brings back to us that you're not being celebrated every day. You're there doing the work, and the work becomes its own reward. So it's our joy and honor to recognize you and to know that you're being nationally recognized with the prizes and honors that we've heard about this evening. So thank you for what you do. We're enormously proud of you. The work you do is important, and it makes a difference. And congratulations. And there's one group, Vice Principal Goldstein, who I'm so happy to welcome back to McGill as our alumna and colleague, mentioned so many groups, but she didn't mention one group, and she was saving it for me, and that is that I know there are family members in the salon this evening who are coming here to celebrate you, and I know for our honorees, you join with me as I express my thanks to you for supporting our colleagues and the work that they do. Félicitations.
So, thank you, Madame Principal. And now I'm going to, the Chancellor and the Principal are going to stay on the stage to help me honor each of the award winners. And now is the time where I'm going to ask each of you to come up to the stage and allow the Chancellor and Principal to congratulate you. I'm going to ask you to stay for a moment so we can have a monumental and souvenir photograph of the moment. So bear with us and make sure you have that moment, and then find your place on the stage. You have to find your name once again on the chair and have a seat. Once we're done with all of you award winners, I'm going to ask your indulgence for a moment while we settle on the stage, and we're going to take yet a larger, monumental, and I was told compulsory, group photograph. So you will have to indulge us at that time. And afterwards, we're going to have time to enjoy the buffet and mingle and relax for the rest of the evening. So I will begin the Bravo part of our Bravo reception tonight to all the major prize winners from the calendar year 2010. And so when I call your name, please come up. Gregory Dudek, Director of the School of Computer Science, Faculty of Science. For the pre-ACFAS, J. Armand Bombardier, intended to recognize research leading to a technological innovation. Next is Guy Moore, Department of Physics, Faculty of Science, for the EWR Stacey Memorial Fellowship. Next, I'll ask a pair of researchers, Roderick Guthrie, Director, McGill Metal Processing Center, Faculty of Engineering, and Michaela Isaac, also from the McGill Metal Processing Center, Faculty of Engineering. These two researchers won the NSERV 2010 Synergy Award for Innovation in the Leo Derricks category for an innovative model of long-standing university-industry partnership. Next, I'll call up our 13 or 11 or so are here tonight, Royal Society of Canada fellows, our new fellows, and the Royal Society of Canada, just so you know, is the Academies of Arts, Humanities, and Sciences of Canada, and is the senior national body of distinguished Canadian scholars, artists, and scientists. First is Barbara E. Jones, the Department of Neurology and Neurosurgery, Faculty of Medicine. Rima Rosen, who is the Associate Vice Principal, Research International Relations, also in the Faculty of Medicine. Michelle Laroe, Department of Biology, Faculty of Science. Siegfried Hakimi, also Department of Biology, Faculty of Science. Mark Sutton, Department of Physics, Faculty of Science. Alain Pinsonneau, Information Systems, Des Hôtels Faculty of Management. Linock, Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering, Faculty of Engineering. Colin Chapman, McGill School of Environment and Department of Anthropology, Faculties of Agriculture and Environmental Sciences, and Faculty of Arts. Robin Yates, Department of History, Faculty of Arts. And our last fellow present this evening, Russell Davidson, Department of Economics, Faculty of Arts. So three of our new fellows could not join us this evening. I just want to mention them as well. Professor Lydia White, who's the Associate Vice Provost, Policies, Procedures, and Equity. Professor Christine Ross is in the Department of Art History and Communication Studies, Faculty of Arts. And Diane Desrosiers-Bonin of the Department of French Language and Literature, Faculty of Arts. So a round of applause for our 13 fellows. Thank you. Next, we have our two winners for Les Prix de Québec. The first is the winner of the Prix Léon Gérin, given to a researcher in the field of social studies, Nancy J. Adler, of the Desautels Faculty of Management. Mark Weinberg, who won the Prix Wilder Penfield, given to a scientist in the field of biomedicine. Next are nine inductees in the Order of Canada, eight of whom are here tonight. The Order of Canada is the centerpiece of Canada's honor system and recognizes a lifetime of outstanding achievement, dedication to the community, and service to the nation. First, Nahum Sonnenberg, Department of Biochemistry, Faculty of Medicine. Alice Chan Yip, Montreal Children's Hospital, Faculty of Medicine. A short break. Claudio Quello, Department of Pharmacology and Therapeutics, Faculty of Medicine. James C. McDougall, Department of Psychology, Faculty of Science. Ernesto Shiprin, Department of Medicine, Faculty of Medicine. Sylvia Cruz, Center for Medical Education, Faculty of Medicine. Maurice McGregor, Department of Medicine, Faculty of Medicine. Jill Julien, Departments of Family Medicine and Pediatrics, Faculty of Medicine. I want to also mention Margaret Locke, who couldn't be here this evening. She's the 13th fellow. She's Professor Emerita, Department of Anthropology and Social Studies of Medicine in the Faculties of Arts and Medicine. And ask you for a round of applause for our 9 Order of inductees. And now I'd like to call up our winner of 2 prizes tonight, Vicky or Victoria Caspi. And she's honored this year with the Killam Research Fellowship, which provides support to scholars of exceptional ability who are engaged in research products of broad significance and widespread interest, and also the NSERC John C. Polanyi Award, which honors an individual or team whose Canadian-based research has led to a recent outstanding advance in the natural sciences or engineering. And to the Canadian Medical Hall of Fame, Dr. Albert Aguayo. The Canadian Medical Hall of Fame is dedicated to creating an enduring tribute to Canada's medical pioneers. Thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, these are our Bravo 2010 winners, McGill University. So as I told you, you would have to indulge us for a few minutes. No, you can all clear the stage. That's fine. I just wanted to very briefly invite you all, of course, to the hall where there's a buffet and where you can, I hope you'll stay and mingle and congratulate our award winners. And just 2 minutes for me to thank all of the people who put this evening together and organized it, in particular the staff in my office, in particular Lorraine Torpy, and also Jackie Rourke, who put together, produced the wonderful video. So thank you all.